Today on Commuter Bible, Job positions himself as a man of integrity while condemning God with accusations of being unjust. It's Job chapters 22 through 28 and Isaiah chapters 3 through 4. This is Commuter Bible, the audio Bible podcast to match your weekly schedule. I'm your host, John Ross. It won't be long before Job receives a proper rebuke from Elihu and then from God himself. But until that time, Job continues to vent and express frustration with the situation he finds himself in. His friends keep telling him to repent of his evil, assuming that his sin is the cause of his state. Meanwhile, Job continues to declare himself as pure, which is also a falsehood. Job thinks so highly of himself that he unabashedly accuses God of not executing justice properly, and in so doing, exalts himself above his Maker. At times, he gives God his due with words, but in his heart, Job is sure that God has been unfair. Job, chapters 22 through 28. Then Eliphaz the Temanite replied, "Can a man be of any use to God? Can even a wise man be of use to him? Does it delight the Almighty if you are righteous? Does he profit if you perfect your behavior? Does he correct you and take you to court because of your piety? Isn't your wickedness abundant and aren't your iniquities endless? For you took collateral from your brothers without cause, stripping off their clothes and leaving them naked. You gave no water to the thirsty and withheld food from the famished. While the land belonged to a powerful man and an influential man lived on it. You sent widows away empty-handed, and the strength of the fatherless was crushed. Therefore, snares surround you, and sudden death terrifies you, or darkness so you cannot see, and a flood of water covers you. Isn't God as high as the heavens? And look at the highest stars. How lofty they are. Yet you say, 'What does God know? Can he judge through total darkness? Clouds veil him so that he cannot see as he walks on the circle of the sky.' Will you continue on the ancient path that wicked men have walked? They were snatched away before their time, and their foundations were washed away by a river. They were the ones who said to God, 'Leave us alone,' and 'What can the Almighty do to us?' But it was he who filled their houses with good things. The counsel of the wicked is far from me. The righteous see this and rejoice. The innocent mock them, saying, 'Surely our opponents are destroyed, and fire has consumed what they left behind.' Come to terms with God, and be at peace. In this way, good will come to you. Receive instruction from his mouth, and place his sayings in your heart. If you return to the Almighty, you will be renewed. If you banish injustice from your tent, and consign your gold to the dust, the gold of Ophir to the stones in the wadis, the Almighty will be your gold and your finest silver. Then you will delight in the Almighty and lift up your face to God. You will pray to him and he will hear you and you will fulfill your vows. When you make a decision, it will be carried out and light will shine on your ways. When others are humiliated and you say, 'Lift them up,' God will save the humble. He will even rescue the guilty one, who will be rescued by the purity of your hands." Then Job answered, "Today also my complaint is bitter. His hand is heavy despite my groaning. If only I knew how to find him, so that I could go to his throne. I would plead my case before him and fill my mouth with arguments. I would learn how he would answer me and understand what he would say to me. Would he prosecute me forcefully? No, he would certainly pay attention to me. Then an upright man could reason with him, and I would escape from my judge forever. If I go east, he is not there, and if I go west, I cannot perceive him. When he is at work to the north, I cannot see him. When he turns south, I cannot find him. Yet he knows the way I have taken. When he has tested me, I will emerge as pure gold. My feet have followed in his tracks. I have kept to his way and not turned aside. I have not departed from the commands from his lips. I have treasured the words from his mouth more than my daily food. But he is unchangeable. Who can oppose him? He does what he desires. He will certainly accomplish what he has decreed for me, and he has many more things like these in mind. Therefore, I am terrified in his presence. When I consider this, I am afraid of him. God has made my heart faint. The Almighty has terrified me. Yet I am not destroyed by the darkness, by the thick darkness that covers my face. Why does the Almighty not reserve times for judgment? Why do those who know him never see his days? The wicked displace boundary markers. They steal a flock and provide pasture for it. They drive away the donkeys owned by the fatherless and take the widow's ox as collateral. They push the needy off the road. The poor of the land are forced into hiding. Like wild donkeys in the wilderness, the poor go out to their task of foraging for food. The desert provides nourishment for their children. They gather their fodder in the field and glean the vineyards of the wicked. Without clothing, they spend the night naked, having no covering against the cold. Drenched by mountain rains, they huddle against the rocks, shelterless. The fatherless infant is snatched from the breast. The nursing child of the poor is seized as collateral. Without clothing, they wander about naked. They carry sheaves but go hungry. They crush olives in their presses. They tread the wine presses, but go thirsty. From the city, men groan. The mortally wounded cry for help, yet God pays no attention to this crime. The wicked are those who rebel against the light. They do not recognize its ways or stay on its paths. The murderer rises at dawn to kill the poor and needy, and by night he becomes a thief. The adulterer's eye watches for twilight, thinking, "No eye will see me," and he covers his face. In the dark, they break into houses. By day, they lock themselves in, never experiencing the light. For the morning is like darkness to them. Surely, they are familiar with the terrors of darkness. They float on the surface of the water. Their section of the land is cursed so that they never go to their vineyards. As dry ground and heat snatch away the melted snow, so Sheol steals those who have sinned. The womb forgets them. Worms feed on them. They are remembered no more. So injustice is broken like a tree. They prey on the childless woman who is unable to conceive, and do not deal kindly with the widow. Yet God drags away the mighty by his power. When he rises up, They have no assurance of life. He gives them a sense of security so they can rely on it, but his eyes watch over their ways. They are exalted for a moment, then gone. They are brought low and shriveled up like everything else. They wither like heads of grain. If this is not true, then who can prove me a liar and show that my speech is worthless? Then Bildad the Shuhite replied, "Dominion and dread belong to him, the one who establishes harmony in his heights. Can his troops be numbered? Does his light not shine on everyone? How can a human be justified before God? How can one born of woman be pure? If even the moon does not shine and the stars are not pure in his sight, how much less a human who is a maggot, a son of a man who is a worm?" Then Job answered, "How you have helped the powerless and delivered the arm that is weak. How you have counseled the unwise and abundantly provided insight. With whom did you speak these words? Whose breath came out of your mouth? The departed spirits tremble beneath the waters and all that inhabit them. Sheol is naked before God, and Abaddon has no covering. He stretches the northern skies over empty space. He hangs the earth on nothing. He wraps up the water in his clouds, yet the clouds do not burst beneath its weight. He obscures the view of his throne, spreading his cloud over it. He laid out the horizon on the surface of the waters, at the boundary between light and darkness. The pillars that hold up the sky tremble, astounded at his rebuke. By his power he stirred the sea, and by his understanding he crushed Rahab. By his breath the heavens gained their beauty. His hand pierced the fleeing serpent. These are but the fringes of his ways. How faint is the word we hear of him. Who can understand his mighty thunder?" Job continued his discourse, saying, "As God lives, who has deprived me of justice, and the Almighty who has made me bitter, as long as my breath is still in me and the breath from God remains in my nostrils, my lips will not speak unjustly, and my tongue will not utter deceit. I will never affirm that you are right. I will maintain my integrity until I die. I will cling to my righteousness and never let go. My conscience will not accuse me as long as I live. May my enemy be like the wicked and my opponent like the unjust. For what hope does the godless person have when he is cut off, when God takes away his life? Will God hear his cry when distress comes on him? Will he delight in the Almighty? Will he call on God at all times? I will teach you about God's power. I will not conceal what the Almighty has planned. All of you have seen this for yourselves. Why do you keep up this empty talk? This is a wicked man's lot from God, the inheritance the ruthless receive from the Almighty. Even if his children increase, they are destined for the sword. His descendants will never have enough food. Those who survive him will be buried by the plague, yet their widows will not weep for them. Though he piles up silver like dust and heaps up fine clothing like clay, he may heap it up, but the righteous will wear it, and the innocent will divide up his silver. The house he built is like a moth's cocoon or a shelter set up by a watchman. He lies down wealthy, but will do so no more. When he opens his eyes, it is gone. Terrors overtake him like a flood. A storm wind sweeps him away at night. An east wind picks him up and he is gone. It carries him away from his place. It blasts at him without mercy while he flees desperately from its force. It claps its hands at him and scoffs at him from its place. Surely there is a mine for silver and a place where gold is refined. Iron is taken up from the ground and copper is smelted from ore. A miner puts an end to the darkness. He probes the deepest recesses for ore in the gloomy darkness. He cuts a shaft far from human habitation, in places unknown to those who walk above ground. Suspended far away from people, the miners swing back and forth. Food may come from the earth, but below the surface, the earth is transformed as by fire. Its rocks are a source of lapis lazuli, containing flecks of gold. No bird of prey knows that path. No falcon's eye has seen it. Proud beasts have never walked on it. No lion has ever prowled over it. The miner uses a flint tool and turns up ore from the root of the mountains. He cuts channels in the rocks, and his eyes spot every treasure. He dams up the streams from flowing, so that he may bring to light what is hidden. But where can wisdom be found? And where is understanding located? No one can know its value, since it cannot be found in the land of the living. The ocean depths say, "It's not in me," while the sea declares, "I don't have it." Gold cannot be exchanged for it, and silver cannot be weighed out for its price. Wisdom cannot be valued in the gold of Ophir, in precious onyx or lapis lazuli. Gold and glass do not compare with it, and articles of fine gold cannot be exchanged for it. Coral and quartz are not worth mentioning. The price of wisdom is beyond pearls. Topaz from Cush cannot compare with it, and it cannot be valued in pure gold. Where then does wisdom come from? And where is understanding located? It is hidden from the eyes of every living thing and concealed from the birds of the sky. Abaddon and Death say, "We have heard news of it with our ears." But God understands the way to wisdom, and he knows its location. For he looks to the ends of the earth and sees everything under the heavens. When God fixed the weight of the wind and distributed the water by measure, when he established a limit for the rain and a path for the lightning, He considered wisdom and evaluated it. He established it and examined it. He said to mankind, "The fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to turn from evil is understanding." Isaiah chapters 3 through 4. Note this. The God of armies is about to remove from Jerusalem and from Judah every kind of security, the entire supply of bread and water, heroes and warriors, judges and prophets, fortune tellers and elders, commanders of 50 and dignitaries, counselors, cunning magicians, and necromancers. I will make their youths their leaders, and unstable rulers will govern them. The people will oppress one another, man against man, neighbor against neighbor. The young will act arrogantly toward the old, and the worthless toward the honorable. A man will even seize his brother in his father's house, saying, "You have a cloak, you be our leader. This heap of rubble will be under your control." On that day he will cry out, saying, "I'm not a healer. I don't even have food or clothing in my house. Don't make me the leader of the people." For Jerusalem has stumbled and Judah has fallen because they have spoken and acted against the Lord, defying his glorious presence. The look on their faces testifies against them. And like Sodom, they flaunt their sin. They do not conceal it. Woe to them, for they have brought disaster on themselves. Tell the righteous that it will go well for them, for they will eat the fruit of their labor. Woe to the wicked, it will go badly for them, for what they have done will be done to them. Youths oppress my people, and women rule over them. My people, your leaders mislead you. They confuse the direction of your paths. The Lord rises to argue the case and stands to judge the people. The Lord brings this charge against the elders and leaders of his people. You have devastated the vineyard. The plunder from the poor is in your houses. Why do you crush my people and grind the faces of the poor? This is the declaration of the Lord God of armies. The Lord also says, because the daughters of Zion are haughty, walking with heads held high and seductive eyes, prancing along, jingling their ankle bracelets, the Lord will put scabs on the heads of the daughters of Zion, and the Lord will shave their foreheads bare. On that day, the Lord will strip their finery, ankle bracelets, headbands, crescents, pendants, bracelets, veils, headdresses, ankle jewelry, sashes, perfume bottles, amulets, signet rings, nose rings, festive robes, capes, cloaks, purses, garments, linen clothes, turbans, and shawls. Instead of perfume, there will be a stench. Instead of a belt, a rope. Instead of beautifully styled hair, baldness. Instead of fine clothes, sackcloth. Instead of beauty, branding. Your men will fall by the sword, your warriors in battle. Then her gates will lament and mourn. Deserted, she will sit on the ground. On that day, seven women will seize one man, saying, "We will eat our own bread and provide our own clothing. Just let us bear your name. Take away our disgrace." On that day, the branch of the Lord will be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the land will be the pride and glory of Israel's survivors. Whoever remains in Zion and whoever is left in Jerusalem will be called holy. All in Jerusalem, written in the book of life, when the Lord has washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion and cleansed the blood guilt from the heart of Jerusalem by a spirit of judgment and a spirit of burning. Then the Lord will create a cloud of smoke by day and a glowing flame of fire by night over the entire site of Mount Zion and over its assemblies. For there will be a canopy over all the glory, and there will be a shelter for shade from heat by day, and a refuge and shelter from storm and rain. Shout out to Tim Brever in Greendale, Wisconsin. Tim sent me an encouraging note and was kind enough to give Commuter Bible a one-time gift through Patreon. So big thanks to Tim. If monthly giving isn't your thing and you want to give a one-time gift, there is definitely a way to do that on Patreon. Just click the big button at the top that says Become a Patron, then scroll to the bottom and click Make a Custom Pledge at the bottom of the next page. Once your pledge goes through, after the first of the month, just opt out of further giving. We love our patrons and are so thankful for each one of you. Today's episode was narrated and orchestrated by me, John Ross, and co-produced by Eric Williamson. Thanks for listening, and remember, happy is the one whose delight is in the Lord's instruction, and he meditates on it day and night.